I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro, popping in to say we've edited this podcast a little for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. There is a lot going on in the world, much of it difficult to process. Plus, taxes are almost due, and that is just exhausting for me to think about. So every Thursday this month, we are going to take a break from the messy human world. Today, we kick off our new weekly series. We're calling it Animal Hour. In future weeks, we'll talk big cats, sheep, and more. Today, we are starting off at the murky waters of Vermont's ponds, streams, and rivers, where beavers are busily building watertight dams and island lodges. We are joined today by two lovers of this flat-tailed, big-toothed rodent. Skip Lyle of Grafton is an expert in beaver management and the inventor of beaver deceivers, which we will explain in just a bit. Skip, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michaela. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you joining us from Brattleboro. We are also joined by Patty Smith, a naturalist, not the singer. She's with the Bonnyville Environmental Education Center in West Brattleboro. Patty, welcome.
Thank you so much, Michaela. And what a species to kick off with.
Yes, we're very excited. I have been wanting to do this show for a couple of years now, so I'm really excited. As are our listeners, we've already gotten a number of emails from folks asking us some beaver-related management questions and singing the praises of this species, including Maureen in Barrytown, who writes, "We need to support the people who are helping this keystone species. Beavers build dams and create wetlands, which in turn increase a diverse wildlife population. I'd like to see every town have this industrial animal building their dams and ponds to assist with flooding." Okay, so most of us have seen pictures of beavers or cartoons. Other millennials like myself might have a soft spot for Angry Beavers, which was an iconic Nickelodeon show from the Y2K era. But not all of us have been lucky enough to see a beaver in real life out in the wild. Patty, what are some of the beaver's most unique features?
Oh, you poor people. Oh, beavers are so wonderful, but I will correct one misconception. They are not obviously buck-toothed. Sometimes you will see their teeth exposed in photographs, but that is a characteristic that's often exaggerated. I have spent the last 17 or 18 years studying the beaver colony in the large 3,000-acre forest block that happens to be right behind my house. And it's just a beautiful beaver flowage. And so I have gotten to know this family of beavers multiple generations now. And one of the things that's amazing about beavers is how very calm they are. They feel so safe in their watery world that they feel comfortable approaching anyone who's on the shore just to check you out. And they're curious. So in this way, I have gotten to know them very well.
And beavers can spend a lot of time underwater as well, up to 15 minutes, which is so remarkable. How smart are these creatures, Skip? How big are their brains?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot right off the bat.
Give the right answer, Skip.
Oh, they are incredibly remarkable animals.
But maybe not that smart. Is that what you're saying?
Well, their brains are pretty small, relatively the size of a walnut. So a lot smaller than human brains. And so I just remind people of that because, solving the beaver-human conflict really boils down to the ability to outsmart beavers. And so I think the country and the species that put a man on the moon a long, long time ago can do that. There's no question. It's just a matter of will. We have the ability and certainly in Vermont, we have the energetic and smart and skilled people to do it in a big way.
Well, we'll dive more into that human beaver conflict in just a moment. But first, I want to get a better sense of the impact that they have on our landscapes. Let's start with the dams and lodges that they build. Patty, you said you've been observing beavers near your home and work in West Brattleboro for nearly two decades at this point. What are the structures like that they build?
I might back up just a little bit farther because sure. I've also looked at historical photos, aerial photos of my town. And in the 1940s, when there were no beavers here, there were no open wetlands at all. And the beavers start reappearing here in the 1960s. And since then, each successive aerial photo session that's taken place shows more and more of these open marshlands and wetlands. And here in my backyard, just in the 17 years that I've been watching, what I've seen is not just new ponds appearing, but ponds that the beavers return to multiple times, assuming the character of semi-permanent wetlands because they build up organic soils and peat mosses. And these are the materials that really slow the flow of floodwaters and foster the persistence of wetland plants. It's quite a remarkable transformation, all thanks to beavers.
Mm. And Skip, how does a rodent with its little tiny paws, you know, walking on four legs, build something like a dam? What are the physics of that?
I guess it begins with millions of years of evolutionary practice. So that's the starting point. But here's another thing about beavers is they're not very fast moving. And it's a good lesson, I guess, for our own species. But they are steady workers. They are just so steady. They get up and go to work every single day. Never take a vacation day, except for perhaps in the winter when they're bound to their lodges and slow down a lot. But and so you know a dam is a relatively flimsy structure. That's important in understanding what Patty alluded to, the history of flowages in Vermont and North America. It's made of mud and sticks, and it's in a constant state of decay. And so, you know, the beavers will bring the sticks. They'll often chew them up into a transportable size and hold them in their mouth and place them in the dam. And then the mud component is just they'll frequently dive to the bottom of the pond, dig up a little pat of mud that they then, with their two front paws, hold against their chest, and then they swim over and they just drop it on the dam. So a typical, or certainly a long beaver dam, might represent hundreds of thousands of those evolutions, those beaver circles and those little pats of mud. So it takes a long time to build a long dam. So that's the general technique.
Skip, what you said about them being such dedicated hard workers reminds me of a tongue-in-cheek email that Peter and Cabot sent to us. Peter writes, "Beavers should be allowed to bid on flood control projects. They are an untapped labor force. They are industrious, eager, and work for shrubs. This cheap labor may dry up the need for new public bonds. A possible drawback is that these rodents are official symbols of Canada, and beavers without U.S. work permits may be excluded from competing for government contracts until Canada becomes the 51st state. They've been effective, if toothy, engineers for eons."
That's hilarious.
I know. Thank you, Peter, for that laugh. So we've alluded to the fact that beavers weren't always around in Vermont, but there was a period a couple hundred years ago where there were an estimate of 100 to 400 million beavers across North America. And then those numbers plummeted. Patty, what happened?
Oh, my goodness. Well, as Skip pointed out, beaver dams are made of mud and sticks, and therefore they don't last for a century when all of the beavers disappeared from North America, disappeared being a euphemism for turned into stylish hats. Oof. Eventually those dams degraded and all of those wetlands drained. And among other things, there was a gigantic sediment dump into the bays and oceans where all of the rivers and streams end up. Oh my goodness.
You're still feeling the weight of this today.
I really am still. And all of our streams not only lost all of that woody debris that creates complexity and habitat, but then the Europeans who were now settling the land decided that it would be much more convenient for streams to just flow in single straight courses across their properties, which is now resulting in some of the conditions we have that are increasing flooding in Vermont. So we really need the beavers to come back and restore that stream and river complexity.
So they were hunted nearly to extinction. And then in the first half of the 20th century, they started to come back. Skip, how did that happen?
Patty's referencing the fur trade, which was, you know, roughly between 1600 when Europeans started to arrive and 1900 when beavers were almost extinct. And so, yeah, all hundreds of thousands of these incredibly valuable, rich beaver-created wetlands or flowages all drained quickly as the dams decayed and went unmaintained. And they all just disappeared as unique, open wetland patches in the largely forested landscape. And so in the long hundreds of years of a beaver absence, they basically all became forested. And so so how did beavers – I guess it started with some changes in the industry that, you know, fur hats maybe became less popular. So a little bit of that started to relieve pressure on beavers, thank goodness, because they very easily could have been made extinct. And then, you know, belatedly, government started to put protections on beavers. And then in addition to that, especially some of these New England or northeastern states began reintroducing beavers from the tiny remnant populations that existed, say, in the Adirondacks and elsewhere. And so that helped get them started. And then they were coming back to a landscape that had not been browsed by beavers for hundreds of years, and it had been heavily browsed by humans, i.e. the old-growth forests had been eliminated. Much of the Vermont landscape had been turned into farmland and then abandoned. And so as they were coming back, there was a lot of forage. There was a lot of early successional species that were starting to reclaim the fields, and so there was no competition, a lot of food, and so the beavers made a relatively strong comeback.
Mm. It sounds like there are other countries across the world that are trying to rehabilitate their beaver populations in the same way that the United States has. Beavers were hunted completely to extinction in the United Kingdom, and only in the past 20 years have they slowly started being reintroduced, actually in an illegal way. But just a couple weeks ago, the UK government officially started a program to reintroduce beavers into the wild, which is quite significant for that part of the world. I want to read an email that we just got from a listener named Allison in Jericho, who writes, "Beavers are absolutely essential for providing a host of ecosystem services such as groundwater recharge, water quality improvement, and habitat creation. It's vital that we learn to live in harmony with beavers and let them restore rivers to their natural state." So Allison there is pointing to a desire to live in harmony with beavers, but that it has not always been thus, and there are still conflicts between beavers and humans today. Patty, let's talk a little bit about these beaver-human conflicts. What are some of the things that beavers do that really can frustrate humans today?
Oh, my gosh. This is the last place I like to go, of course, as a complete beaver advocate, but they cut down trees with their teeth, for heaven's sake. And so one of the first things people often notice is that some of their riparian area trees may be falling over, and water may be rising in places where they don't want it to rise. And what I like to say is that humans really have divvied up this entire planet into our own little ownership parcels. And we have our own plans for what should happen on that land. And when all of the many other species that share this land need a home as well, this is kind of where the beaver comes in and starts creating beaver habitat. I would love to urge listeners to think about ways we can accommodate beavers and their plans for our land, and in that way also welcome in all of these other species that benefit from beaver habitat. What I'm really trying to say is it's not always easy to live with wildlife, especially beavers. And I feel it's incumbent upon us as the species that has so much influence on this landscape to first think about ways, even if they be inconvenient or perhaps involve some expense, to work with these other species that can help provide habitat and fulfill our obligation as stewards.
So we have a question from a listener named Diana who I think is having not necessarily a conflict with beavers, but is noticing how they are changing the landscape and wants to figure out a way to address that in a responsible manner. So Diana writes, in Fairfield, since last fall, we've seen beaver activity in a stream bed right by a road culvert. They've taken down small trees along the dirt road and stream bank and begun a dome-shaped home on the bank, not more than 20 feet from the road. It's apparent the stream has been partially blocked further down as the water is pooling deeper near the beaver hut. I'd like to see the beavers thrive, but I'm concerned about their efforts and that they're going to be problematic for the road. What would best practice be to protect the beavers and the road? Skip, you've worked with so many communities over the years facing issues like Diana's in Fairfield. What would your advice to her be?
Well, I'll start by saying that beavers are restricted to a tiny percentage of the landscape, or at least their damming activities. Maybe 2%, and those are on low gradient areas on small streams, and so determined by physics, beavers are damming in the exact same places today that they did possibly for millions of years, but certainly for the 10,000 years prior to the fur trade. So it was the fur trade that was the big disturbance that changed everything and still greatly affects the way we look at flowages and beavers in the landscape today. So that's important to keep in mind. And so they're just struggling to return the landscape, a tiny fraction of the landscape, to its ancient form. They're not something new. They're not an exotic invasive species. They're just trying to restore these incredibly rich wetlands. And so It's a fantastic trend and an opportunity unlike any other. I mean, how many other ways can we restore some of those ancient ecosystems?
But what do you do when they're getting over the road?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I just want to create that context, because some people think, well, they'll often say beavers were never here before, and it's a bad thing. But right. it's a return of something very healthy and very natural. And so there's only two ways to solve these problems. One is to kill the beavers, not just one beaver or some of the beavers, to extirpate them from the general vicinity of every conflict point, thereby not getting any of the receiving any of the values, the great values that beavers offer to society. And that's a very inefficient approach, too, because beavers are tremendous explorers of the landscape or dispersers. And so what are they looking for? They're often looking for high-quality habitats. And there's no habitat feature more important than a perfect dam site. And so a road culvert is a tiny hole in a giant man-made dam. So that's a beaver, powerful beaver magnet. So that'll always be clogged, you know, regardless of how many beavers you kill at the site. So it's very inefficient, very expensive. So the best way to solve these problems, always, in my opinion, is non-lethally. And in this case, that road culvert would need to be protected by what I call a high-quality flow device. It's very, very difficult and serious engineering challenge to sneak water away from these animals. So, which is why I focus on the word quality. And so that's it. Then you can, you know, and it's also a very harsh environment. So whatever you build has to be built to last, ideally for many decades. But if you can do that, then the conflict's over and you can relax and you can enjoy all the values of beavers. Mm-hmm. You know, the ecological, hydrological, and aesthetic. I mean, just these flowages are beautiful places to enjoy wildlife viewing. Mm.
And that's what you specialize in, Skip, is developing these high-quality flow devices, beaver deceivers, or the ones that you install, to kind of help beavers and humans live a bit more peacefully together. Catherine writes that they live in Enfield, New Hampshire, and beavers have built lodges on the pond and a system of four dams on the outflow stream from the pond. They also clog the road culvert, which causes the pond to rise more than 2 feet, and homeowners are losing our waterfronts. We know the value of stream restoration, but beavers are not our favorite animal. They're wondering what to do. And it sounds like, Skip, you're saying they need a similar engineering solution like what you're describing.
It's the only true long-lasting remedy, and it has the tremendous bonus of keeping live beavers in ecosystems and creating really millions of dollars of value for society. And well, so I'd be glad to help out. I mean, you can visit my website at beaverdeceivers.com.
Let's go to the phones. We have Walter calling in from Ripton. Walter, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd just like to say I know some beavers that live near my house, and I've found out how really incredibly smart they are. But also that last year the Vermont Beaver Association was launched, and it's a website that will help people understand beavers and help people protect their infrastructure or trees from beavers when they move into their home. And I've had the beavers living, literally, they have a canal 65 feet from my house, and I put in some flow devices, and that's kept my house from flooding. Quick note, in Czechoslovakia, they were allocating over $1 million to build a series of dams recently. And while they were going through the permit process, some beavers moved in and did better than what the engineers planned. And they saved the state over $1 million because the beavers did it for free and helped protect the areas from flooding.
Mm. Wow, Walter.
But check out the Vermont Beaver Association. We have a website now.
Great. Thank you so much, Walter, for that information. Let's go next to Raymond, who's in New York. Raymond, go ahead.
Believe it or not, Walter just stole my thunder.
Do you also want to talk about the Czech Republic?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
Well, tell us more. What else do you know?
Well, it was a multi-million dollar plan for wetland reclamation for flood control, and they avoided it doing it because of budget and controls and COVID and et cetera. And 3 years later, they come back, and the beavers had literally done a better job to European specifications, which are much more stringent than ours, and created a brand new ecological area that controls the river flooding.
Wow. Well, Raymond, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about that. It sounds like there's a number of different countries, from the UK to the Czech Republic, that are trying to work with beavers in new ways. Patty, have you heard about any of these efforts in places outside Vermont?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you about a story from England. In England, of course, beavers were long gone, and unfortunately, there was a release of a species that is native to Vermont, the mink in England. And the mink was very good at hunting a species called the water vole that lived along streams in England. And streams, of course, in England without beavers were nice and straight. So at a site where beavers were reintroduced, the beavers immediately started creating complexity with dams and forked streams and canals, and the voles instantly had a lot more cover, a lot more places to hide. The mink just couldn't just cruise up and down those straight streams, and the very rare water vole population has started to rebound there. So yay beavers in England.
That's great to hear. Let's go to John in Waterbury Center. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm a big fan of public radio and beavers, and this is a great program. Anyway, I've been observing probably for the past 40 years a beaver pond that's a quarter of a mile or so through the woods from me. And one thing I did notice, and I just had a
John, I'm so sorry. We're having some trouble with your connection. I know you've been waiting on hold for a bit, but I'm going to ask you to call back and see if we can get a better connection for you so we can hear that story. In the meantime, let's go to Brian and Wolcott. Brian, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm calling to share my little beaver story, which for many years, call it a couple odd decades, we've lived alongside the beavers. The river runs along my driveway, which is a town trail that runs way back into the woods in Wolcott. And the beavers have done lots of interesting work over the years, manipulating things and building up dams. And there's been floods over the years that have washed it out, and they've rebuilt. And it's been fine for all these years until this past year. In the spring, they had lots of little babies, which was adorable and awesome to go sit with them and watch them swim right around, until they started to move down the river towards the town road and started to plug the culvert under the town road. They were also clear-cutting that area. They weren't just taking little trees. Once they took anything with green on it, they were taking big, big maples down, and they were stuffing everything. These beavers are such incredible engineers. I spent hours and hours taking their dams apart, and they would put them right back together the next day. And they were plugging the culvert under the town road, which eventually flooded my driveway.
Oh, no. Did you broker a peace deal?
Well, I wish I could have brokered a peace deal. I tried many things, and there was, you know, we looked into having a baffle put in, but it wasn't really appropriate there. I mean, really what I would have liked is for them just to have gone, you know, 100 or 200 feet up or down the river would have been fine. Sadly, we had to have somebody come in and trap them, which was really, really devastating because... because, you know, they're amazing creatures, even though technically they're really just giant rodents.
Brian, I want to share what you're telling me reminds me of an email that we got from a listener named Larry in Worcester, who wrote to us to say that every year their town road crew experiences multiple problems with beavers. It would appear the population is at an all-time high. There are many places in their town where the beavers have created a problem, which is costly to town budgets. The road commissioner ultimately ends up having a trapper remove the nuisance animals. Skip, I know that trapping or killing beavers is the last thing that you want to hear. But it sounds like, you know, some folks, like our caller Brian, who really loves beavers, are struggling to figure out any other way to, you know, keep their driveway or their road from flooding. Are there some instances in which, you know, you've seen beavers and humans are just, there's no way they're going to get along?
Hardly any. If you know what you're doing and you use a high quality flow device, you can solve any problem. It doesn't have to be, for example, deep water. That's just something that protects a poorly built flow device. So it can be done anywhere, and it's far more economical and, as we've noted, better for the environment. And so, and beavers aren't, their populations aren't at an all-time high because there were far more beavers in what could arguably be considered a lower quality habitat in the old growth forest, you know, when Europeans arrived. As I said, you're only talking about a couple percent of the landscape. So the average town might, you know, on the town roads, might only have, say, 5 chronic conflict points. If you don't eliminate them non-lethally, then those are going to become scores and scores of conflict events over the years and decades. It's been going on already at the exact same places, you know, for 50 or 75 years since beavers started to return in numbers. And so in a week or maybe 2 weeks, you know, one person who's skilled can eliminate all the conflicts points in a town for many decades. You got to just eliminate them. Killing is just a guarantee that you'll never eliminate the conflict. It's very, very inefficient.
Mm. It sounds a bit like therapy. Like you have to get to the root cause of the problem, or else you're just going to paper over it.
If you want to solve it, or we can go on, you know, for the next 300 years, just killing more and more beavers and cleaning culverts and never making any progress.
That does sound
so
like a lot of work.
We really have to change this, and we have the ability to, because it's not an overwhelmingly large problem. Mm. We have to start to make that transition.
I want to go back to the phones because we have our caller John in Waterbury Center back with us. John, you were telling us about a beaver pond that you've been observing for a couple decades. Could you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, several decades, actually. And my question is, I've noticed over time, there was a period of time when it went from one pond with one dam to two and then three and four. And I think if I were to go down there now, I think there might be as many as 5 different levels. And my question is, why do they do that? Is that youngsters getting kicked out of the pond and going upstream or downstream, or how does that happen?
Oh, great question. Thanks, John. Patty, do you want to take this one?
Sure. Well, beavers are always searching for new sources of food, and the more they can stay in the water to access that food, the better. So in almost any beaver system, you will see these tiers of ponds heading up or downstream from their main pond. And I'll also add that in my personal backyard beaver flowage, the beavers there move every single year. They create an entire new pond upstream or downstream and build a new lodge and start the whole system of building tiers upstream and downstream there, just maximizing the amount of water they can use to forage for food.
I want to start with a question here from a listener named Matt, who's writing about beaver-human conflicts, which we've been talking about a lot this hour. Matt asks, is it true that if the beavers are removed, their intact habitat remains and then attracts new beavers? Skip, is that what you've found?
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt. I mentioned that these sometimes I call them narrow man-made outlets, but the majority of them are road culverts, are beaver magnets because they're the perfect dam sites. But beavers, and this is another important thing to keep in mind, they're territorial animals. They don't tolerate the presence of other beaver families, and they often have pretty large territories. You know, so you don't really get, you can never get giant populations in any given area because of that life history strategy. And so, and I, as I also said earlier, they're great explorers and dispersers of the landscape. And what are they looking for? They're looking for high quality habitats, i.e. good dam sites. And as territorial animals, they're looking for unoccupied habitats. And so what do we create when we use a kill strategy, say at a road culvert, an unoccupied habitat? So it just creates a double magnet effect, guaranteeing future conflict.
And these habitats that they've created for themselves, the dams and the lodges in particular, are, as we've discussed a bit, pretty remarkable structures. We haven't gotten too detailed, though, about the lodges that beaver families live in. And they do live in families. They mate for life, and they have kids that live with them. Patty, can you describe what exactly goes on in a beaver lodge?
Oh, my gosh. I was hoping to have a chance to do this. It's quite extraordinary the way they build these lodges. And in case you're wondering how they do it, they will start either with a burrow in the bank of the pond or a platform of mud and sticks out in the middle of the pond, pile up all kinds of woody building debris, and then they chew out with those amazing beaver teeth and those amazing beaver hands a living cavity that is within that pile of sticks but up above the water level. And on top of this pile of sticks, they then place a layer of mud. And I have spent so many hours watching beavers do this. In fact, one year I camped out next to a beaver lodge, and all night long, you would hear this pitter-patter, pitter-patter of beaver feet as the beavers would emerge from the pond with handfuls of mud. They'd be up on their hind feet at this point and scamper as far as they could.
Walking on two legs, essentially.
On two legs, yeah. Get as far up the side of the lodge as they could, and then they would pack that mud onto the side of the lodge. And then in the winter, of course, that freezes like concrete. And now they're inside this cozy above the water level lodge that stays nice and warm. It has a layer of chewed up plant materials as bedding. And when they're hungry, they just dive down into the water, go out to their submerged food cache, select a stick, bring it back in and have a little meal. It's so nice. And the whole family's together, mama and papa, and probably kits from 2 years. Maybe a little damp and crowded and dark, but
it sounds pretty cozy to me. let's get some more voices in here. We have Jim calling in from Williston. Jim, go ahead.
Yes, hello. My name is Jim Heltz. I'm out of Williston, and I'm a filmmaker, and I just finished a film about beavers called New Neighbors, the Beavers of Allenbrook.
Oh.
And actually, I mentioned Skip in it. We've actually corresponded a little bit when I was making the film. And they are wonderful animals. I didn't know anything about beavers when I started. You know, I knew they had, you know, big teeth and the flat tail and webbed feet, but I didn't really know anything. And I found out so much about them, how they are environmental heroes, really.
Mm.
And I think, you know, with climate change, they're so important because they're helpful in, like, making natural fire breaks.
Mm.
That's because of their ponds.
Jim, what did you say your film is called?
New Neighbors, the Beavers of Allenbrook.
Great. Well, we'll be sure to keep an eye out for it. And thanks for letting us know about your work. We have Kathy in Orwell on the line as well. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, Michaela. I had the privilege of being a reporter in Boston many years ago, back in the 90s. And I covered a story about unexpected spectacle of great blue herons crossing Route 2, which runs east-west into Boston. So in the Acton-Boxborough area, there were lots of great blue herons, and they were nesting in the trees. and the trees had been killed by the beaver dams, which had flooded acres and acres of land. So it was like a scene from Jurassic Park. And it created a problem because people wanted to stop and see this, you know, but then the state police were in cat and mouse game all the time because there weren't really easy places for people to pull over safely. Mm. But, you know, it's a perfect example of how one species ended up helping another. And it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I don't know how it resolved in the long run, but...
Wow.
That's a nice example of species helping another species.
That's great. Kathy, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. We also got an email from Michael in Windsor who writes, Lake Runnymede and its wetlands host a healthy population of beavers. The schools are across the street, and it would be a great opportunity for a high-quality, place-based education if the school could create grade-appropriate curriculum units that involve studying the beavers and their wetland habitat. There's a beaver deceiver there that still functions well installed by Skip Lyle, if people are interested in observing it on this town-owned public property. Beverly is calling in from Moncton. Beverly, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for doing the show. It's so important. Just wanted to add that Moncton is a very beaver-friendly town, and Skip has been handling our beaver for about 4.5 years now, and we really struggled with a lot of flooding and a lot of expense to our town road crews, and we've really made a lot of headway in those departments by utilizing Skip's culvert fencing and high quality flow devices. So as a result of that, we did create the Vermont Beaver Association and the Vermont Beaver Collective. So we do a lot of work with a lot of different road foremen in the state of Vermont, all over. So if there's people out there that are looking for help, please reach out, because there are solutions, and trapping is not one of them. So, you know, thank you, Skip and Patty, for being there today.
Thanks, Beverly. And Beverly's with the Vermont Beaver Association. The Vermont House Environmental Committee met earlier this legislative session to discuss the role that beavers play in our wetlands and in reducing flooding. Skip, I'm wondering if you could talk to us just a bit about kind of what's on your radar in terms of why legislators are talking about beavers, and you know how you hope that their populations can flourish and coexist with humans.
Sure. You know, it's funny that Czech Republic story has gotten so much play, but there are hundreds, possibly thousands of places in Vermont where sort of similar sort of miracles could happen, as long as, you know, once we take steps to stop killing beavers. And so I'm thrilled that this committee is looking at that issue. And there's a lot we can do to capitalize on beavers, but it really all starts with being able to protect the infrastructure. I mean, even in a rural state like this, we have a dense roads network, and so no beaver is ever very far from causing trouble at a conflict point. So it's not like we can, you know, isolate regions where we can have healthy beaver populations, then wipe them out everywhere else. We have to make this work, in every town. And along every road. And another thing about the Czech thing, it's funny because we're the leaders of this. We are the absolute leaders, particularly of flow devices. There was a tremendous program that was from the 1950s and was done by the New Hampshire Department of Fish and Game. They put a lot of flow devices out. And then in the 1990s, I started my career working as a wildlife biologist for the Penobscot Indian Nation. And I wrote papers then of, you know, just talking about the thousands of acres of wetlands we created indirectly simply by you know, taking measures to protect the infrastructure non-lethally. Mm. So, but we're not doing enough. We're definitely falling behind, I think, regions like Europe. And so there's a lot more we can do. And we really need the support of our fish and wildlife agencies. They're really influential and powerful groups. And so They need to partner. They need to partner with the growing number of private citizens who want both to save tax dollars and to have healthier environments. And so there's never been a better opportunity than what we have with beavers to do that.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left here, but I want to hear your advice for listeners, both of your advice on one question here. We've heard from a number of listeners during this show via email and on our phones who, you know, really want to live in concert with beavers, but are really struggling to figure out a way to do that because their driveways or their roads are being flooded and they don't know what to do. Now, it can be costly, at least in the short term, to install a device to reroute water or allow beavers to continue living there. For somebody, maybe a private landowner who is just starting down this path and trying to figure out what to do, and maybe doesn't have a ton of funds available, what are your suggestions, Patty? Let's start with you.
I would like to mention that there is grant funding available for people who can't afford to put in a high quality flow device. And I would also just like to say that for an entity like, say, a municipal road commission, the cost of a flow device is very small. But for a private landowner, please reach out to Bonnyvale Environmental Education Center. I can help you connect with grant funding, or the Vermont Beaver Association can help you connect with grant funding. It's also, if you want to protect trees, building a simple fence around trees is very easy, and we can help with that.
Mm. And Skip, we only have about 30 seconds left.
Well, there's also an organization by the name of POW in Vermont that has funding to help that. But yeah, flow devices are tremendous investments, and they're very low-cost public works projects, if you will. And so I just encourage towns particularly just to try to get a line item in their budget and start solving this problem.
Skip Lyle of Grafton runs Beaver Deceiver. It's a human-made structure that keeps water levels at a range suitable for both beavers and property owners. And Patty Smith is a naturalist at the Bonnyvale Environmental Education Center in West Brattleboro. Skip and Patty, thank you so much for your time today.
You're so welcome. Michaela. Thanks for doing this.
It was great.